Scripture this morning is Mark 4, 35 through 38. On that day, when evening came, he said to them, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd, they took him along with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. And there arose a fierce gale wind, and waves were breaking over the boat, so much that the boat was already filling up. Jesus himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion, and they woke him and said to them, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?"
Morning. But not to you. You can report to my office after services. We'll have a discussion about the proper use of my sermon material. It probably works really well, though, come to think of. What I just don't want is for it to develop a psychological connection between the sound of my voice and sleep for you. You know, that could be dangerous. We're going to continue our series this morning looking at the strong man in the Gospel of Mark and the doctrine of the power of Christ and the significance of that for us today. The theme passage we actually took from another chapter we're not covering this morning, but this is from Mark chapter 3, 24 through 27. If a kingdom is divided against itself, that kingdom cannot stand. And if a house is divided against itself, that house will not be able to stand. And if Satan has risen up against himself and is divided, he cannot stand, but is coming to an end. But no one can enter a strong man's house and plunder his goods unless he first binds the strong man. Then indeed he may plunder his house. And what Jesus seems to be conveying to us is that he is here to demonstrate his mastery and power over the adversary who has held us in his influence for so very, very long. Jesus is here, though he compares himself to a thief, to take what is rightfully his, which is all the universe. The old prophet Ezekiel spoke on God's behalf, saying, "All souls are mine, saith the Lord." We all belong to him to start with. But someone else has held us under his sway for far too long, and Jesus has come to reclaim us. To do that, he wants to demonstrate his power and his authority over all the powers and authorities that seem to be so great in our lives today. And we've seen him up to now casting out demons and healing illnesses and things of this nature. And today, he's going to do something that's very familiar, and that is he is going to once again demonstrate power without seeming to have any. In a story we know well, he's going to overcome a storm, or to repeat the theme of our lesson, without any of the typical markers of strength. Jesus is going to show us that he is strong enough to be Lord. And today he'll do that by conquering the sea. We actually had too many songs to choose from. When Bobby leads singing, I always pick some sermon title that has, you know, no songs in the book for him to choose from, and I try to make it difficult for him. For Jacob, I ran out of song slots before we ran out of song ideas. That we could have made 100 songs in the songbook about the billows are raging and so forth. And when upon life billows, we are tempest tossed. You know, 1,000 different songs that talk about the sea and being on a stormy sea as a metaphor for human life. And that tells me that there is a deep connection that we get, right, without even having to have it explained to you. Preachers feel like they have to explain it anyway, because that's our job. But without having to explain it, people just get, they resonate with the idea of a stormy sea looking a lot like the life that I live. Even if you're not on the water, a lot of times your life feels like it's on a stormy sea. And the idea that someone is capable of mastering that sea is so impressive and important to us that we do have a lot of songs about it. We like to sing about that idea. We're in a landlocked state. We're in Oklahoma. We're about as far from a sea as you're likely to get, and yet we love to sing songs like we're all sailors, right? Like we're all been out, oh yeah, I remember my days on the ship. You know, we've never been on a ship. But we imagine that because it's an easy idea for us to get and to understand and to connect to our life. So Mark chapter 4, we'll start doing that. We'll start making these connections and seeing what we're being taught by the life of Jesus Christ. In Mark chapter 4, 35 through 36, the story is introduced as was read for us just a moment ago. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. There is nothing out of the ordinary about that scene, and that's what makes it so dangerous. When you're watching a movie and something really boring is happening, does your spidey sense go off or your hairs tingle? You can say, uh-oh, something's about to happen. That guy's in trouble. They're not going to survive. Because when it gets really dull in a movie, you know the killer's coming out of the closet or the roof's going to cave in or the meteor lands or whatever. That's when something terrible happens. And again, that's true to life experience. It seems like the worst storms come when we don't expect them, when we're doing perfectly ordinary daily activities. That's when we seem to get hit over the bow with something we just weren't expecting at all. I had a conversation, it's probably been 10 years now, with my dad, as sons and fathers sometimes do, especially if they happen to both be preachers. And we were talking about, someday someone's going to make funeral arrangements for my dad. And we were discussing whether or not I would be able to someday preach Dad's funeral. And the discussion we had was, you know, it kind of depends on how it comes about. If it's the end of a long stretch of years and I get to see it coming and make peace with it and I'm in a good state of mind, yeah, I might be able to stand up and say some words at your funeral. I think I might could muster that kind of state of mind. But Dad, if you drop dead out of nowhere and I don't see it come, if I just get a call out of the blue someday, your father has passed, now preach his funeral in a couple days, I don't think there's any way I'll be able to do that. Now, it's the same event, right? Your father passing would never be easy, but we recognize one coming out of the blue versus one you get to, at least, as we say, prepare yourself for. It doesn't always make it easier. Sometimes the preparation takes as much out of you as you walk slowly with them towards the end. But the idea is that that unexpected storm is the one that capsizes you. That's the one where you say, I just don't know how to deal with that. We'll say, we use phrases that cliche, you know, that kind of make work. I need time to process this, which is our way of saying that storm came out of nowhere. I just wasn't expecting that. I wasn't prepared. And that's the kind of storm that this is. These are veteran sailors, at least a few of them. Not all of the disciples are sailors, but a few of them are fishermen. A few of them know what they're doing, right? These aren't tourists. These are guys who know what they're doing, and they're taking Jesus across the sea to the other side. In Mark's gospel, this is actually kind of a fascinating little thing that happens, that he's going from over where the Jewish folk live to the other side where the Gentiles live. And the convenient way is to get there by boat. But they decide to go that route. I mean, for them, if you're an old fisherman, it makes more sense to take a boat straight across than to walk all the way around. Why not? Get in the boats, we'll go. And it was just a completely normal thing, like you getting in your car on Sunday morning. It was that kind of ordinary to them to just say, well, of course, we'll get in boats and go across. To me, if you say get in your boat, I'm suddenly on an adventure, right? I wasn't born on the high seas. I really did grow up in a landlocked state. If the water's deeper than I can walk in, which is quite a lot of water, but if it's deeper than I can walk in, I'm going to have something that floats attached to me. When I was dating Celine, her family tried to drown me in the Illinois River, which is another story entirely. But one of the things they found out is that when they took me down the river on the river trip, from the time we get off the bus to the time we get back in the car, my life vest stays buckled. Now, they all get handed the canoe, and here's your life vest, and they throw it in. You know, they're all kind of veteran river swimmers and whatnot. They hand me mine, and it's strapped up and tightened and buckled, and I'm looking for extra safety features, and it never comes off. We stop for a quick break, standing on the shore, got it all buttoned up all the way up and down, because that's just not a place where I feel secure. But if you know what you're doing, you're not so worried about it. You throw your life vest over there. These are veteran sailors. These are fishermen. Their father's father's father had been fishermen. This was an ordinary day. So to be taken by a storm of this magnitude, this unexpectedly, is a frightening experience indeed. Which brings you to verse 37. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so the boat was already filling. Now, this we know a little bit more about as Oklahomans. We may not know about the high seas, but we know about storms. Bill Path isn't here this morning. You may know that. There was this storm that came through last night. There was a little microburst down in Okmulgee and ripped some of the roof off of one of the OSU IT buildings. They're down there assessing damage, and they've had some rough weather down there last night, wind-wise, that just kind of came out of nowhere. We're more familiar with that. That is, we heard about it. I didn't know it had happened, but it doesn't surprise any of us. In Oklahoma, a storm passes through, somebody lost the roof. We say, well, what else is new? Right? We're familiar with that concept, and that's kind of what this is, this out of the ordinary but familiar, right? It came out of the blue, but when it got there, oh, you know what it is when we're in trouble. That wind is stronger than we anticipated. It wasn't a windstorm. It was a great windstorm. It was a sailor-frightening windstorm. It was a storm that comes up, and even the veteran sailors are concerned. The water's coming into the boat, right? This isn't just, well, we don't know what we're doing, or Ben can't swim. This is, no matter what level of experience we have, we can't keep the water out of the boat. And we know what happens when it all gets inside. What kind of storm frightens sailors? Guys who had lived their whole life at sea. We have a few sailors. Jim's a Navy man. A couple others, if you know, Jack was Coast Guard, a few others. What kind of storm frightens people that have spent time at sea? What kind of person, what kind of storm is that? And I think there's an answer. It's the kind which reminds them they have not tamed the sea. 10 minutes ago, they thought they were getting into a boat and they were the masters of the ship. Veteran sailors, going to get in the boat, going to go across the sea, perfectly ordinary, just like you getting behind the wheel of a car, perfectly normal outing. And then the storm comes along, and something reminds you that you have no power here. That it doesn't matter how much power and expertise and experience you have over the boat, there is something going on that you have no control over whatsoever. And those are the storms that frighten us in life. You're an accomplished person. You have expertise. You have experience. You see trouble coming and you know what to do about it. If it's a business problem, you know how to fix it. If it's a personal problem, you know how to deal with it. And then something hits you that you have no control over. A disease, cancer, something like that. And you realize that no amount of business acumen, no amount of personal skill and experience, nothing you have done in your entire life makes you strong enough to best that. That's the kind that frightens us. Give me a problem I can fix. It doesn't frighten me. It can take some hard work, but we'll get through it. But when we realize we're not the master of the sea, that there is some power out there we have not tamed. Doesn't matter how great your medical doctor, there are diseases that kill you. Doesn't matter how great your financial circumstances are, there are economic things that happen that devastate you. Doesn't matter how strong a family you've built, there are things that can happen to a family that rip it apart. And that's when you realize, well, I'm not as nearly as in control as I thought I was. We like the sensation of being in control. It makes us feel safe. When I'm at the helm and the boat's doing what I want, I feel safe, which is why we love that metaphor. I've used this poem before in another sermon, but I wanted to fling a line or two of it at you. This is one of my favorite and least favorite poems. Favorite because it's absolutely beautiful. When you read the whole thing, this is just a verse or two. When you read the whole thing, my blood just boils all the way through. And it's about, you know, mastering your own life and having control. And it's this thing that really touches us deeply. I say it's also my least favorite because it's completely wrong about everything. That's the way we want to feel, but we never do. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. That feels good. That's the way I want to feel, right? That's the way you want to teach people to feel. You want them to feel like you could put in the effort, you could learn the skills, you could make the right choices, and you would have mastery of your life, and you wouldn't have these problems anymore. Stuff would come at you and you'd be prepared. And this is the way you want to raise your kids, right? You want your kids to grow up into adults who can make good decisions and be prepared for whatever comes at them, to be the captain of their ship. The captain of the ship is not the master of the seas. And that's the frightening part for all of us. That no matter how much expertise we bring to bear on life's problems, there is still, if I can use really technical language, there's still stuff out there that doesn't answer to us. There are still dangers out there that we have no control over, obstacles that we, on our own, have no power to defeat, only to endure. And that is terrifying. And so here in the story, you have these veteran sailors who are facing one of those moments. It had been their suggestion. Hey, let's just cross the sea. It'll be easy. Yeah, we can do that. No problem. Of course we can. And then this happens. And we're all going to die. And just that quickly, it came out of nowhere. I suspect that we know exactly how that feels. And so what do we do when that happens? When you're in control, you're calm and collected. When you're not in control, you're looking for someone to blame because you're angry. So in verse 38, they do. But he, Jesus, was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" What a great phrase. "Carest thou not that we perish? How canst thou lie asleep?" That's how the song goes. Do you not care? You see, so when things happen out of the ordinary, suddenly these people, this is the irony of it, so pay attention. When something happens out of the ordinary, these people who just like 10 minutes ago, "I am the master of my fate, I am the captain of my soul," suddenly turn to God and say, "Well, where are you? Aren't you supposed to be in charge?" Well, we didn't want him in charge 10 minutes ago. We wanted him out of our life. We wanted him at a distance. We wanted to run things. We wanted to have control, and we were comfortable in that control. And then things get really bad, and we say, "Well, isn't God supposed to be in charge?" This is what children do, right? Parents know the story, right? The child comes, and they say, "I can do it myself. Leave me alone." And then they get in over their heads, and they say, "Mom, Dad, weren't you supposed to do that for me?" And it's just that fast that we forget that, like, 5 seconds ago, we were saying, "Leave us alone, we can do it ourselves." And that's the way we live our lives. Till the bombs start falling and the waves start roaring. Then we say, "Oh, where is God?" And suddenly we get very angry that he's quiet. We get very angry that he's not doing something. What, by the way, just a side note, what did they want Jesus to do? Oddly enough, I don't think they expected him to rise up like a superhero and stand at the top of the ship and battle the storm with his fists. I don't have any idea what they expected, but I think what they wanted was panic. They were insulted that he was not as terrified as they were. When we're terrified, we want other people to be terrified with us. When we're outraged, we want other people to be outraged with us. "Don't you feel this way?" And we get really upset when people aren't. And yet there is Jesus, carefree. Carefree. "Carest thou not that we perish?" We mistake effortless power for careless sleep. We look at Jesus in the boat and we think he's not doing anything. But I want to suggest to you, Jesus is doing what he had been doing all along. We look at God in a difficult situation and we think he's not doing anything. But I want to suggest to you, he's been doing what he's been doing all along. God is the master and sustainer of the entire universe. And he never stops. He never ceased. The world keeps spinning and life keeps going because God is our creator yet. Even now, he keeps all things in store by the might of his power. And though the person of Jesus was taking his nap on a cushion in the boat, he had never stopped or relinquished his power of master of the seas. He made that sea. So you veteran sailors took your confidence because you had sailed it a few times. He made that sea. And it's there at that very hour because he keeps it there. And if one day he didn't want it there, it wouldn't be there. He is the master of that ship, the whole universe, and every sea in it, and every obstacle that comes our way. He has never stopped being in control. We expect something different. We want him to do something flashy. We want him to part the sky and say, "Hold on now, ocean. Let me do something different now." We want him to fight the demons. Ancient people thought differently about storms than we do. If you took a class in meteorology in the first century, you didn't study weather patterns. You studied demons, right? There are monsters that caused the weather, and monsters lived in the sea, and that's how the world worked. And for them, you know, that God was supposed to be at war with them and fighting them. And yet they didn't realize that while that's at least partially true, it was far more effortless than they ever would have imagined. There was no actual power contending with God. When the storm comes, it doesn't mean God was losing and the storm was winning. God never stopped being in control. There was no place on the map where his power was less. And there is no event in your life when his compassion and care for you is less. Don't mistake the effortless power of God with him being asleep at the wheel. He is and will remain in control. There's another song, one of about 20 I was ready to request today. "Be Still My Soul" has a line in it that says, "Be still my soul, the winds and waves still know the voice who ruled them while he lived below. The winds never forgot, by the way. We forget. The rest of creation has it figured out. We're the ones that forget. That's a great human capacity. You want to understand humanity in a nutshell? We have the ability to forget that God's in control. The rest of nature doesn't. The rest of the world knew. The storm knew who was in the ship, and it wasn't going down, and Jesus knew that. It was the people he had to contend with. It was doubt and fear that he had to wrestle with. In verse 39 through 40, he gives us the alternative. And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. I don't know how you imagine that scene. I would like to imagine it again like a superhero movie, where he really does get up at the bow of the ship and he says, "Peace, be still," and you know, and Shakespearean actor gets up and shouts. I suspect it was a whisper. I suspect it was as effortless as a man waking from sleep saying, "Hush now. Go back to bed, storm." Because this wasn't a wrestling match between Jesus and a storm. It was over before it began. He has effortless power. That ship was never going down. No ocean or sea or storm can swallow the ship where lies the master of ocean and earth and sky. It's simply not possible. For the same reason at the cross, death could not hold him and keep him in the grave, this storm wasn't taking him down to the ocean's bottom. It simply wasn't possible. It didn't have that kind of power. His power mastered the sea, and he turns to us and expects our faith to master our fear. He said to them, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" What's he asking? Have you not learned the effortless power of God even yet? Have you not seen even yet what he's capable of? Do we still live in a world where God is one among many powers that might succeed eventually? When we there's an old map in the British Museum in London. It's from 1825. It's one of the earliest maps of the New World you're likely to find. So 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. This map's from 1525. Very old map. It is a map made almost entirely out of gossip and rumor. Shh. 1492, ocean blue, 1525, Columbus is well back, and people are making maps of the New World based on his rumor. What sailors came back with and described of the New World and tried to explain, they tried to draw. And so they would try. They would put little sections down where they'd say, here's where we think there's a peninsula, here's where we think there's a reef, here's where we think there's something going on. And then there were dark spots on the map. And they'd put things, and you know what they wrote. What did they write in the map? "Here be dragons. Here be giants. Here be fiery serpents." And they'd write little notes for themselves because they didn't know what was there. There's a great British explorer who came into possession of that map. In the 1800s, 300 years later, he comes into possession of that map. And it's a treasure to him to have a map this old. And he's exploring those unknown regions. And he starts marking them off. And where it says, "Here be dragons," he doesn't write, "I know what's here." He writes, "Here be God." And you can still see that map in the museum today with the little dragon sections marked off and God put in his place. Because the man didn't think, now that I've been there, suddenly I'm in control. This was an explorer. He understood the sea. He knew he never actually had power over the sea. But there weren't dragons there. There was no alternative power. There was only the might and strength of God. And so it remains. His power mastered the sea, and our faith should master our fear. And so in verse 41, we're left with the same question they were asked. And they were filled with great fear and said to one another. By the way, this is the second great, third great. There's three greats in this story. There's a great storm, and then a great calm, and then a great fear, a great awe. "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" We are then challenged with that same question, to come to grip with the challenge of knowing a Jesus who can do all these things. Jesus is not simply a moral philosopher. He is not merely a great teacher, though he is great, and he is a teacher. He is the unsinkable Jesus Christ. He is the all-powerful creator of the universe. He is the being whose whispers calm the seas of life and make known to us the effortless power of God. Our challenge is not to become better sea captains, to gain better mastery of our lives and make everything better. Our challenge is to put greater confidence in the master of the seas and the master of our souls. We're going to stand and sing a word of encouragement at this time. If there's anything we can do to help you with that, won't you come?